Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who do the fine art with needle and thread. And this week we have with us Lisa Dugas. Lisa is owner of the French Needle, an online store, and actually talking to her from France right now. So we get to learn a little bit about French needlework, which is an area I'm most curious about. So looking forward to that. Lisa, let's just start out with the basics. How did you get started in needle arts? You know, who taught you? Those kinds of things.
Oh, like so many people, I think I just kind of dabbled it when I was a kid. My Nana and my Aunt Jane taught me. I had hand-smocked doll clothes, which I thought were lovely. And I've just always liked needlework and just knew how to do a little bit. And when I got older, particularly after I had my third child, I started doing a lot of embroidery and cross stitch, and not a good knitter and not a good crocheter, but I just always liked those kind of things and just self-taught.
All right. I love the self-taught. That's what I am. Yay. So you've dabbled in a little bit of everything then?
Yes, I have. Mosaicing. I was a photographer by trade. Decoupage things, all sorts of things.
In other words, you make things quilting. With your hands.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes it's just a mess, but I enjoy doing it.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. Yep. So then, do you have a favorite needlework type that you do now?
Well, recently, and I don't know exactly how I've gotten into this, but I'm really into the slow stitching movement. So I don't know if you know anything about that.
No, educate me.
Well, I'm not sure I can. It's something I just got. Okay. I got a book at, but I realize I've been going to for many years. I like things. I'm not very sophisticated in my needlework. I like repetitive things. I like working with the colors. And I tend to go for the mindless. I listen to books on tape and I watch TV and I talk to people at the same time. But I just really like to have the movement of my hands. And there's a whole group apparently out there called slow stitchers. And it's kind of a new thing. It's the yoga of needlework.
Okay, I need to be part of this club because I am without a doubt a slow stitcher. So I need to be part of this club. So what do slow stitchers do? You just take your time? You're not driving
to finish?
It's
not just about
finish?
Not rushing. I think it's the kind of projects. There aren't a lot of running stitch, a lot of, you know, very plain stitches. Sashiko would be an example of it, that whatever that Japanese one they also call Burma or something, where they reinforce clothing, or just where you're repeating, it just becomes meditative. You're not looking at a chart every second or following directions, or you're just sort of stitching. Yeah,
okay.
It's meditative stitching, or I just like doing that kind of thing where I have my hands going and my mind can be somewhere else.
Okay, or so this gets to be kind of like knitting is for knitting people, where they just sit
exactly.
there and pay no attention, or seemingly, yeah.
Oh. Right, which is why I knit, but I can only knit trapezoids, and I knit for a group called Comfort for Critters, for animals that are being transported different places so they have something of their own. Because I love to knit, but my knitting is just so bad that only the cats and dogs appreciate it. But that's what I do.
Yeah, I never
it's very
could,
relaxing.
Never could get into the knitting. Okay, well, so slow stitching then.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, it certainly fits my speed. I don't know about... I mean, I do projects from time to time where that I call mindless stitching, where, you know, like needlepoint,
yes.
where you just, you don't have to think about it much.
Right. I think you could substitute the word mindless for slow stitching.
Okay.
Mindless.
And not a negative. You know, that's, of course, immediately a negative connotation there, but not so much, not at all. It's one of those where you can, like you say, keep your hands moving and not really have to think about it much. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. But it's just a whole, because all the fancy, super fancy work, and some people do very sophisticated, and God only knows, I know people who just do knock your socks off sophisticated work. But I just know that's not what I do.
Yeah. All right. I've learned something yet again. Slow stitching. Okay. I'm going to start a club myself.
So there's some books out there.
Is there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm not supposed to buy any books.
Oh, well, I got one and I gave it away already, or I would have sent it on over because it is quite interesting.
Okay, going to have to do some research on that. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So, all right, so she's doing slow stitching. Mm-hmm. Okay, so tell me how the French needle gets started.
Oh, I married a Frenchman. That's sort of the...
That's a start.
Yeah, that's a start. And we always came at least every summer, if not more, to France. And I would want to get projects, and I would shop around, and I'd find all this stuff I really loved here. And I just thought the American stuff was a little more commercialized, a little more standardized, just a kind of different aesthetic. And so I start thinking about it. And this is sort of at the beginning when people were starting to shop online and stuff. But I just thought, wow, could get this stuff that nobody has and maybe make a little business out of it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did.
So, yeah, I don't, and maybe I'm just not connected, but I don't see a lot of French needlework, you know, other than DMC floss, projects, designs, kits, whatever.
Right. They're very underrepresented in the market. But I mean, first you should say needlework is global. I mean, I feel like all needleworkers have things in common with people all over the world. But there's certain, I mean, United States was really into a country kind of thing for a long time.
Yes.
Of course, people are very aware of the Danish work, the Handcraft Guild, really popular in the 80s and the early 90s. And there was a book here by Regine Desforges about cross stitch, probably in the early 90s too. And it just gave way to a wealth of new designers who did really beautiful things in cross stitch in particular, and also a revival of some of the old designs and old patterns. And I know a woman, for example, who bought out the Maison Sajou, which was a house that existed, was all notions and needlework stuff and sewing stuff from the 1800s. And it went defunct in France, even in the 1950s. And in the early 90s, Frédéric Crétin-Billet is her name. She owns Sajou. She bought it. She bought out the whole brand. And she's done great things for the industry. And they're just, it's still a handful of people who were there, the big designers, I guess, like in the United States. I'm not that aware of the United States market, to tell you the truth. But in France, there's, you know, a dozen very prolific designers, but they do good, fresh work. And France tends to, the French really like to use, you know, always good materials in terms of really high quality linen and threads and sort of calling back to their history of needlework in their, in their families, and make a lot of decorative things. Not so much something big to put on the wall, but French in general, I mean, they really nice stitched dishcloth, for example, for a kitchen, or just smaller things, little gifts you give people. But most of the women, certainly maybe not the newest generations, but know how to wield a needle and have respect. And generally in France, arts and crafts is very valued. Handmade things are very valued. And I think that's carried over to the needlework.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What, that, you know, and that's, I wonder, I don't know if that's a dangerous area to explore, is handwork being valued, because we had more than one discussion about if you do make a piece of needlework and finish it and give it as a gift, and that whole argument about whether it's truly appreciated for what it is, or you didn't spend X dollars at a store, so therefore we can't define it, and therefore it's not as much appreciated. And when you say that, there seems to be a more of appreciation of handmade pieces in France.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Like when we were younger and we did the kindergarten's monogram, teacher's monogram, and always giving away these things. And after a while you're going, are these people even appreciating this, or my wasting my time. But yeah, I hear handwork, and I think more so in the United States than it used to be, but certainly hand done is really very valued in France. I heard a speech, and actually it was in New York, by some designer a couple of years ago, and he said, the up-and-coming designer label you want to have is handmade, you know, as opposed to Chanel or Louis Vuitton or something. Uh-huh. It's just handmade. So, I think it's kind of even a reaction against all the internet and all the gadgets we have all the time. To have things handmade and with good materials is a value, yes.
Yeah, well, and I think there's even a movement here in the States, as people, quite frankly, get tired of staring at their phones all the time, and start to look for something. What can I do with my time? And I've talked about this 100 times. What can I do with my time, and what do I get out of it? Mm-hmm. Rather than an hour went by and I just read a bunch of stuff that didn't help me one way or another.
That's true, but the good side of all the internet and this is how quickly you can hone in on very specific materials, designers you like,
yes,
techniques. You could teach it yourself. I mean, with Mary Corbett's wonderful tutorials or other people's, it's a thing you can teach yourself, and you can find exactly what you need. I used to be in photography, and I would do some old kind of processes, and it would be so hard to track down the chemicals and everything we needed to do these. And, you know, in that way, the internet has really fostered and helped a lot of people out doing their little, you know, their own projects,
right,
at finding the right materials. And sometimes materials inspire you so much they kind of lead to creation. So it's true, you can overdo the telephone thing, but it's also really been a boon to crafters, I think, too.
Right. Well, and I think you hit on it there. The creation part is, there's such an exchange these days, unlike we've ever seen, that the ideas for what to do with needlework and how to use it, how to finish it, how to display it,
right,
just exploded because people
see. Yeah, and you see someone who does something great and you're thinking, I can do something like that too, or I want to try this with different, you know, it can be very good for creativity.
Yes. Oh, I think without a doubt. Yeah, there's pros and cons to everything, no doubt about it. Yeah. Yeah. So what is it about the French designs that set them apart, or maybe there isn't?
Well, I don't think there's anything real specific. I mean, their modern designers have certainly all have, you can tell a design by Véronique Henninger, or you see something, you know, so who it is, but they also draw on their history, and a lot of the monogram work and all that came out with all that, the cross stitch. So I don't think it's just a good tradition. It's not, generally speaking, too cutesy, if I could say that.
Mm-hmm.
There has been some bleed over from the American market in the cutesy world, but there's a lot of classic work also. So just drawing from their history and illustrations, there's wonderful things from Aesop's Fables and all those kind of cultural points that the French people share.
So there's certainly a style to it, but not something where if you lined up a bunch of needlework from different areas that you would say, oh, that's clearly French then.
Right, right. Exactly. Because also with all the internet and everyone the way shares in terms of modern designs, you can just tell each individual designer, but you wouldn't pick out the lot as being different from the others.
Yeah, yeah. Is the needlework hobby active?
It is. It's very active. Of course, most women know how to knit, but there are shows here, needlework shows, with just thousands and thousands and thousands of people. I'm mostly in Paris, but I just feel per capita, and this is me guessing, but that there are many more women here that stitch than in the United States.
Mm. And is that more in the bigger cities, Paris being the obvious one, or is it fairly equal throughout the country from what you know?
Well, I think it's fairly equal, and they'll travel into the big cities to go to the shows, and they're just very nice shows, and we'll make a, you know, 1 or 2 day trip out of it, come with their girlfriends, and it just seems like more people are engaged with it, because I don't know if you've been to a needlework show lately in the United States, and the attendance just isn't there.
I don't I've just been to a couple of trade shows. I've not been to one where like a fair or an exhibit or something to see what that's like, but my impression is it's not they're not heavily attended. Is that I mean obviously it's culture and other things. How much of the fashion industry do you think drives that?
Probably the fashion industry doesn't drive it, but I have a little theory about. I was watching a show the other day about haute couture fashion, and what a small group that is that even buys those pieces. And when you really drill down on what they're doing, it's the hand done embroidery and embellishments done by Lesage, the house of Lesage, which is now owned by Chanel. And that is what makes a difference between a $5,000 dress and a $105,000 dress. So I'm taking the dog by the tail and saying it's the other way around. It's the fact that there are these artisans that can still, because otherwise, how can you justify? I mean, you can't really justify it anyway, but just in terms of what is really making that the high of the high end, it's handwork. It's handwork.
And there seems to be a real resurgence of that lately, in fashion. Handwork on, is that true, or am I just
Well,
clueless?
I think it's been through the ages, but maybe it has had to come up a little bit. And certainly, Chanel bought the Lesage company to make sure it doesn't go away, and to really, you know, it's done in France and it's done at super high standards. And you know, it's the top of the top, and they don't want to go it away, because what else can you know, how else can you distinguish haute couture outfits from other outfits unless it has to do with the hand embellishments.
Got to justify those prices somehow. Yes.
Yeah, and that's the only way that I can think of.
Yeah. Well, that's
And it's
interesting.
certainly, yeah, very, yeah, look, you know, the shows that show the really, it's that's what just drives the ticket, and worth every penny. I'm not trying to say it isn't. It's, you know, just incredible handwork, and that's what makes the difference.
Yeah, they're on the Fiber Talk Instagram, the ones that I follow. I've latched on to a couple of those higher end embroidery fashion, dresses, obviously. And it is absolutely amazing what they do with embroidery and the extent that they do it on any given dress. And it's just gorgeous work. And I sit there and think, oh, the hours, the number of hands that have to be involved in that just to make that happen in a timely fashion has got to be amazing.
Right, and they also source the most. I had a group here in France last week. We went to a ribbon house called Macuba. There's also one in New York, but they just source the most high-end silks and ribbons, and just have, you know, such a lovely treasure chest of materials to draw from, and then apply them in these really extravagant ways, and all the, you know, with all the know-how of all that handwork, and it just makes it into art.
And you have a skill level over there that allows that? Do you think
Not
that?
by the not by the general population, no. And once again, I don't know the United States as well as I should have on certain things, but there's a professional. You can take a professional study program through Lesage to become a professional embroiderer. I'm not sure we even have that at home. And you can also major in, I know we have this, decorative arts and textiles, but that feed off into these schools. So they have a, yeah, there are people diplomaed and super high and the best worker of France in certain areas. And yeah, there really exists a, not the general population, but a well of people that are truly experts in needlework. Probably somewhat comparable to the Royal School of Needlework, although I'm not even that sure about that. But yeah, there are professional embroiderers here.
That'd be an interesting career path.
Right. Do you know, last week, again, with my trip, we visited the manufacturer of Gobelin, who do tapestries and rugs. And they don't get that great a salary, but they go through all this training and they're selected and they work on the same rug or tapestry for maybe 2 years.
Ooh.
And there's like six people for 2 years working in the old factory of Les Gobelins in the center of Paris. And it's just absolutely amazing to see the work. They're paid not incredibly well, just kind of basic, but they're the only people that do this kind of work. And the state maintains this manufacturer. Those rugs and pieces go into embassies and official buildings. Most people will never see them. It's kind of crazy when you think about it, but the standard of the work is just incredibly high.
Six people, 2 years on one rug. Boy, you better get along.
Right. And you can't buy this stuff. Apparently Denmark bought a few pieces a couple years back, but generally speaking, it's, yeah. But they, I, you know, was watching them. They did, a couple did have earphones, but, you know, just sitting side by side in good light, and but it's a slow go.
Yeah. and it's, so it's all commissioned work then? There's no...
Well, no, it's not commissioned. Nobody can pay for it. The government has this thing. Oh. They maintain it. By the time the rugs have, you know, an artist, they choose a couple artists each year to pick a work, and then they translate it to this rug or tapestry. But it takes all these years. They, you know... They have a dye shop there where they make all the fibers to order. And then they have, you know, six or whatever people working on it for a couple years. You can't even price something like that.
No.
Nobody could buy it.
Yeah.
So kind of crazy, kind of a little bit Louis the 15th for my taste. But on the other hand, they are preserving the know-how.
Right. The art. Yeah. 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 That gets down to the question I've had from time to time, I'm sure all of us have, do you sell that? And my response anymore is, you couldn't afford it.
Right.
You know, my work is average, but you still couldn't afford it because the time is just can't be accounted for. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard for people not who haven't done that to kind of wrap their head around what's involved.
Right.
But
yeah. So talk about this tour some more. That sounds fascinating.
Oh, well, it's my fourth year doing this. And we've gone mostly to Paris. And 1 year we went to Bayeux to see the tapestry.
Mm.
But in 2 weeks I have ladies.
Okay, let me stop you on that one. Tell me about that thing. Because in the pictures it looks like, well, there's a lot of history there, but there's a story and there's a tremendous history. And so that carries the day for me. But the tapestry itself just doesn't look like something I'd move mountains to go see. Am I wrong?
Kind of.
Okay.
You're kind of wrong. It has to speak to you in some way. And there is the story of it and how it's, you know, what, 60, 70, I don't even know, meters long. And you walk through the whole thing. And the colors, I believe, are somewhat faded from when it was originally done. But it is really beautiful. It's done all in one stitch. It is really beautiful.
Mm.
It is. It's almost got a modern edge to it when you see the restrained palette. And I just think it's really quite remarkable. I like it quite a lot. Of course, this year with the group, we went to Cluny to see the tapestries, you know, the unicorn and all that. And just see different pieces. And it depends, you know, different periods or different things speak to you. But I think Bayeux is really, really lovely.
Hmm. Okay. Well, and of course, you know, in fairness, when have we seen a photo do justice to needlework?
Right.
Yeah, never. So, so this tour is a large group of people, same tour every year or a different itinerary?
No, I usually take about a dozen people. And so I'm not a crowd person myself and don't like to wait in line. So it has to be a small enough group to be a little bit nimble. And we just, have a couple days at Lesage or with a Lesage teacher. This year also the women were really happy. I did a workshop called about a subject called cartonnage. Do you know what that is?
No.
It's actually box making from like mat board. It's an art and craft in France, and I haven't seen it at home, but it's really good to do. And the reason it's really good to do for needleworkers is it gives them another kind of way to display the work that's not a pillow or a wall thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's making boxes, and we had a great class with that, and they actually in one day assembled their first box covered in fabric, and it was they were really excited about it, and I just never seen it in the United States. But yeah, we do some of the time is actually hands-on, and other time is as I say, Gobelin, when you know, watching people, or the Decorative Arts Museum, and things to do with textiles mostly. Mm-hmm. A lot of eating too, I must say.
Well, yeah.
Can't come to France and not eat.
There would have to be that, wouldn't there?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Now the food in Europe, I'm not an overseas traveler, but I have to say the food in Europe is just in general, and I'm sure in France even more so, is a different level, no doubt.
Well,
about
they
it.
Take it very, very seriously.
Yeah.
But so for the trips, we've gone to Paris, but then I have ladies that want to come on another trip, and for the first time, we are coming down to where I live, which is Burgundy, and I rented out a whole chateau, a mini Downton Abbey, for a week. And we have, I don't know if you've heard of Lorna Bateman from the UK.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. She's going to come over and do our class in the mornings. And then the afternoons will be wine testing and garden visiting and different things to sort of, you know, take advantage of the area. But yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Okay. I'm hooked. Wow.
So far, we've been very lucky about getting really great groups of women. It's, you know, Supergirl time, Super Stitcher time, and just it's been really fun so far.
Yeah. And then you live what area?
In Burgundy. It's called La Charité-sur-Loire. It's 2 hours south of Paris.
Okay. Is that just out in the country, small towns?
Kind of. It's a small town. The bigger towns close to us would be Nevers and Cône. We're not too far. We're an hour from Bourges. We are 5 minutes from Sancerre. Some people have heard of Sancerre wine. And Pouilly. We're next to Pouilly. So a lot of wine, but not the well-known part of Burgundy, no.
Oh, okay. Okay. But I'm sure beautiful country.
Yeah, I mean, it's green. I know the south of France very well, too. And this I like in a way. It's flat, but it's greener. So it's kind of a quiet part of France. It's actually kind of poor. We're one of the poorest departments. And people have left the department, you know, to go to the bigger cities. But it has its charm still.
Yeah.
Medieval.
Peaceful. I'm hearing peaceful.
Yeah. Quiet. Yeah, it is. Easy life. I go downstairs. Right now we're in an apartment. I go downstairs. I can hit my bank, my dentist, and pick up a few things for dinner in about 3 minutes. So it's very convenient.
There we go. Now you're talking to me. Yep. Yeah.
Easy.
My kind of living right there. Mm-hmm. So talk. You mentioned about how the quality of materials that are available or are used in France. So ground cloth, thread, the whole bit is just really a availability of the best stuff is pretty good.
Well, I'm sure you've heard, and it's true, French people pay a whole lot of money for DMC, which is now manufactured somewhere else. And that's not a good example, but I'll take a good example of wonderful thread, Auvers à Soie.
Mm-hmm.
Small little workshop. That's where we did our workshop last week. And they manufacture just lovely silks. A lot of Americans know that brand. And the average French woman, I think American women tend to have bigger stashes, to tell you the truth. It's just a different mentality. You know, the place, French people, particularly Parisians, live in much smaller places. They don't, it's not sort of as much the collecting mentality as the using, but you wouldn't think of doing a work without using the nicest materials you could afford. And good linen, there is French manufactured linen, and of course, wonderful notions from Boin, and they have a good tradition of that. Unfortunately, like in the United States, a lot of the brick and mortar shops have closed. I've even seen a great change in Paris over the past 5 years. So it's not as ready available, but of course you can order it online. Right. So I guess that makes up for it.
Yeah, that linen thing is an interesting aspect. The availability and the quality of linen seems to depend on a lot of factors that aren't easy to pin down. Is linen manufactured in France? Or
yes, there's a few places that still do it. It's nice. It tends to have a little bit more open weave than a lot of the ones. I also like Italian linen. Graziano, it's got some good linens, and they use a lot of that here in France. But yeah, good materials.
Yeah, I'm just curious about all the little nuances that make it different, better, maybe worse. I don't know, but
yeah, I guess the best thing I could say, and not to sound too self-serving, but look around my site, you can see a lot of things in one place that you would have to travel a lot around in France to get your mitts on. And, you know, if it comes across as a hook, of course I have things that aren't French, but it's just a little bit different flavor than the American patterns and designs and kits.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of your site, the designers you have on there, you got Helen Richmond and Helene Lebert. I got no way to say the French.
Helene Lebert. She's
there,
darling.
There, thank you.
Helene Lebert, she has done quite a few books in cross stitch, but I really have my eye on her because she's pushing the craft a little bit. If I have some kits up there that are some of her newer things, and she has a fresh eye on needlework. She's a decorative arts major. She has the degrees and all that kind of thing, but in textile. But she's pushing the envelope a little, mixing some things up. The things just to me look really fresh. And another thing that's trending, and I don't know in American stitching, but certainly here, is the French don't tend to do such massive projects that are 2-3 years long. They tend to do things that don't take as much time. So her work is, you know, can be completed relatively quickly. It's not a lifetime commitment. But I just think it's really fresh, and she's young and interested in needlework, and that's what we need, new blood.
Yes. Yeah. Her designs, so much of it with snow on some pine cones, and yeah, there's just a real unique look to it.
Yeah. And even in her cross stitch, I sell a lot of books because women, that translates the language because they're just cross stitch charts. Most of the books I sell are cross stitch, and it makes the French designs accessible to everyone because they can use whatever supplies they have in their stash. But even Helen's, I can look at a design and tell if she did it, you know, like Marie Claire Idée, some of the big design craft magazines here, she'll do something almost every issue, but I can just see her work and know it's hers. It's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. And she, you work directly with her. How does that whole thing work?
I've called her and she's done designs for me. I've said, I'd like a little something like this, or I order books through my supplier that I know she's done, or I order kits that she's done that she's marketing directly from her. It's not such an easy life to say I'm going to be an embroiderer. And she's doing it professionally and doing well.
And you mentioned about her being young. Is that is there a good movement of young people in France?
Never enough.
Okay.
I do think it can be kind of, that's why the quicker projects are better. And there's another woman, I've sold her books in the past. I have a new one coming in. Her name is Cécile Franconi, and she does a lot of kind of crazy quilt type things into kits and smaller pieces. She's wildly popular. And it's a lot about, you know, kind of organically stitching the found things, not really following a pattern, sort of improvising and using any kind of materials you can come across. And she's not as young as Hélène, but I think a lot of younger people are interested in that and sort of the found thing. And I'm hoping the slow stitching thing is going to drag people in.
Well, it appeals
to
me.
Not so regimented. Not so really hard to learn. You have to learn, you know, a million. It's like a running stitch. Come on.
Right.
We can do that.
It appeals to me because that's my speed. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And then another one that fascinated me was, and I won't get these right. I'm sorry.
That's
terrible.
Okay. That's okay.
But Sophie Bester and Judith Dessou.
Oh, Sophie Bastier et Judith Dessou are les brodeuses parisiennes. They have a company, and they are also with Saju and les brodeuses parisiennes have really kind of put a lot of new blood into the market. Sophie used to edit a magazine, a really good magazine called Au Point de Croix, and she is into the vintage designs. And they also work with Véronique Inginger, and they're prolific, and it's a little bit kitschy, and I think that's also good for the younger, you know, like Sublime Stitching in the United States or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same, but it's kind of a counterpoint to it in that it's younger, it's a little tongue in cheek, it's fun.
Yeah, they have some of their alphabet designs are really neat.
Mm-hmm.
Really have some.
And one of those little letters is enough to.
Yes.
You know, they're pretty big projects.
Yeah, that was the first thing that went through my head is, boy, one letter would be an accomplishment right there.
Yeah, I don't think many people do any of them as whole integrated alphabets. That's how big most of them are. There's maybe just a couple big enough for that. But yeah, they're fun, and she's done very, very well.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful stuff. Yeah. We'll have to put some pictures up so people can see it. And
yes.
Yeah. Frenchneedle.com, by the way, folks, for people who want to see all this stuff. Hard to show it when we're just talking. But, I mean, it's interesting in that it's a different approach. You say there's not really a distinction, but there really is, in my eye, a distinct look and feel to these designs that in a lot of ways we just don't see. Some of these alphabet things are just gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really beautiful stuff. So, you know, talk about your
stitch. Yeah, I mean, it's more,
go ahead.
More European. It's just more European looking. It's more, it's just the craftsmanship is just, coming from a past of a lot of decorative kind of things. It is a little different. I agree, but I just can't put my finger on it exactly.
Yeah, I wouldn't try to define it, but as you look at it, there is a difference. There's a different feel to it. And I'm not sophisticated or experienced enough to try to define it, and I wouldn't even try, but it does feel different. Yes. So talk about your stitching. Do you do much on your own?
I do. I do a lot. My husband and I took a trip to Nova Scotia 2 years ago, and I started rug making, and I do punch needle. And sometimes I see there's a designer in France called Marie-Thérèse Saint-Aubin. She has very distinctive – I just have her book. She doesn't do kits, but – very distinctive animals and insects that are very ethereal, and I love her stuff, so I'll do it. But a lot of the things I do are more abstract, and I just like working with the colors. And this, I mean, needle punch is a great slow stitching kind of mindless thing. And rugs, I like to make rugs. Is that needlework?
Well, yeah, why not? Why not?
Did I go off the reservation here?
No,
Gary?
No, it doesn't matter to me a lick.
That
comes up from time to time. People making rugs, and there was was it latch hook rug when I was younger?
Yeah, the pieces are pre-cut. No,
yeah, that's not the same thing, is it?
No, this is more like rug hooking. You can either do it with strips of wool or with yarn. But I went up to Nova Scotia, and they had a lot of that. And I just got really excited about that and all the colors and the wool. And you can also punch needle rugs. I think you can needle point them too. I think that's what Barbara Bush did. But it's just, you know, because it's very useful to have a rug.
Now, you're doing those rugs that actually go on the floor or decorative to hang on the wall? Oh, right on the floor then.
On the floor.
Just stomp on them.
If I make a quilt, I put it on the bed.
Okay. Nothing decorative there. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You do a lot of quilt work?
Yes, I do, but I cheat because I have an Amish lady who does the actual sandwiching of it. So I do piecing. I do a lot of piecing.
I don't think you're alone there.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people send that out for that other part. Yes.
Yeah. I just like the color part, working mm-hmm. with the color and the patterns.
Yeah. So which is the diversion for you, quilts and rugs or needlework?
All of it. Whatever catches me, or decoupage or mosaics or whatever catches me, just, you know, it's a great part of life to do something really fun and make you happy. And it's great therapy.
Yeah. Oh, really. There's no doubt. Yes, no doubt. The home you're working on there in France is going to have a studio of some kind?
Not really a studio. It's going to have a big guest area on the attic floor. But I just got back and when I was in Paris, I picked out all this old Italian tile to do on the chimney. And I realized I just put together a patchwork quilt. It just happens to be in tiles. Really fun and really fast. Of course, it's not up yet, but just picking it out was really fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Installing might be a little different deal. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But the lady said to make sure we'll be working off a drawing and I'm going to be there when the guy's doing it. So.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Hopefully it'll come out okay.
Yeah.
I said, do you like this? Is it really wonderful? She said, I do. She said, but I don't know how many people would actually dare to do this. So we'll see how it comes out.
So do you get to, I need to understand more about the French Needle. Now it's a completely online business.
Completely online.
Okay. So that allows you to
occasionally I'll do a few, like I'm going to go to a Vogue Knitting Live in Columbus, Ohio in November, or I do a small retail show somewhere. It's fun to come out and to go out and meet the customers, but by and large it's online and I'm gone half the time. So I have people helping me ship back in the office.
Hmm. Yeah, I wondered
about
that.
My daughter in London does marketing. She does all the social media. So it's kind of a spread out thing.
You say your daughter's in London? I was talking over you there.
Yes, my daughter's in London and she does, on the side, she does my marketing for me. She knows the business pretty well.
But it's based in the States.
It's based in the States. Everything's shipped from the States. I get it into the country, deal with customs, shipping, blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, everything's over there.
And that's got to be a challenge, dealing with customs and getting things shipped over.
Oh, yeah. It's a challenge. It's a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. Long lead times.
Some of the things, I have a guy who makes scissors. You might have seen some of the handmade scissors.
Yes. I've seen his scissors. They're amazing.
Yeah. Well, I'm not just calling up and send three of this and five of this and... It depends what he's in the mood to make and depends. So there is a little lead time, but it's kind of like De Beers. You kind of ask for things and then you get what you get. even I have some handmade jewelry and everything. And that's part of the business of working with people like that is you can't be in a big hurry and you can't expect things and they have to be in the mood. And so it's just a little bit different working with artisans than mm-hmm. obviously than something that's mass produced.
Right. Oh, and I have to ask about the scarves. You owe me some time. I mean, I have no interest in owning one of these things, but you owe me a half hour of time as I sat and looked at all the pictures of these scarves. What amazing work.
They are amazing work. Of everything I sell, I think that's the thing I am continually the most excited about. It is a level of handcraft, I would say, almost unattainable. The workshops and the people who work at home, mostly women in Madagascar, go through extensive training. And those things are just mind-blowing. And I've been working with Sophie for probably 10 or 12 years. And so I talk about her first client in the United States was Saks Fifth Avenue flagship store, and she couldn't keep them in stock. So you know, it's not a good thing to work on a big scale retail, but I absolutely love her work. I have so much respect for what she does, her sense of color, her just, you know, and I've done very well with them, but it's mostly from people that know her work.
And this is Sophie who?
Digard. Digard. She's in Paris. She grew up part of her life in Madagascar and sort of knows the lay of the land there. But she designs it. She has a full-time dyer in France. And she works in linen and wool. And it's just raffia. It's just mind-blowing work. I'm just so happy to work with her. And that's kind of my gig. Once I got into needlework and making, selling needlework and selling kits and books, then I started discovering some of these other things that were just off the charts beautiful. And I thought, you know, maybe I should try a little bit of it because my customers can appreciate that. Mm-hmm. They know what handwork is. They're appreciative of color. They, you know, some people, you know, all the more power to them, just have no interest in this kind of thing. But I think I really did hit on something in terms of my demographic of a customer just really can appreciate some of this super high end, beautiful work. And it's really fun to work with her.
Yeah. And needlework does kind of self-select out people who appreciate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
The screening has been done. You know, $400 for a scarf. It's crazy. But when you know how long that goes into, what kind of thing, the colors, the, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of colors that go into each thing. It's people can say, well, yeah, I do appreciate that. And her stuff is just incomparable.
Yes. Well, for someone who couldn't care less about a scarf, I have to say they really are eye-catching, every one of them. Yeah. And I assume you have your own collection of them.
Yes, I have a few, but I have to learn to appreciate the ones that come through because, you know, I can't have them all. But every year she has hundreds of patterns, different patterns. She has probably 200 color palettes.
Oh.
She changes it every year. I rarely get the same thing twice. So every time I get a new shipment in, and I go to Paris frequently and pick out what I want because there's so many. But I get them in and it just overcomes me how beautiful they are. It really does. I mean, I just have a lot of respect for it. So I don't have to own every one, but I appreciate every one of them. I really do. I really do.
She has a lot of people working for her?
In Madagascar, yeah, probably about 500 people. You know, they go through some pretty intensive training, but it's good because a lot of them work at home or have, you know, mothers, and certain women do certain kinds of patterns and others not so much. It's the same with my the jewelry line called Lorina. She's from Moldavia. She's a prolific designer, and she has people working on her things, executing them in Moldavia, Italy, and France, also at home. Mm-hmm. And that also is a pretty, it's a tatting process with beads, and it takes pretty extensive training to be able to do it. So, you know, she designs, they do it, but it's, you know, people are making their living like this. It's fairly paid. And it gives the world an, you know, the unbelievable gift of their work.
Right.
They obviously, I mean, I think some people think Sophie Digard is out there crocheting all these herself, you know, something like that would be impossible to say the least.
Yeah. The jewelry is also, it's amazing. This,
really fine, good, high quality work, which is what my customers like.
Yep. Yeah. Well, it's interesting how you diversify out of needlework into these other areas, yet very, very much related.
I do have customers that buy across. They'll buy scarves, they'll buy jewelry, they'll buy scissors, they'll buy kits, you know, but I have others that are just in the one thing. But of course, I have to say my favorite customers sort of get where my idea is coming from.
So what's next for the Fresh Needle? You got something on the horizon that we can talk about?
Oh,
seems like things really just evolve for you.
Yeah, it's very organic. It's very organic. I'm always running across things and getting a whole bunch of new sashiko things in just because I'm on my slow stitch, you know, jag. and always new things. And from the creators I have, they're fortunately very good at coming up with new things and, you know, asking questions about the trips, what'll be next. And there's always something. I'm never quite sure what it is, though.
That's all right. That's all right.
Yeah.
Eliminates exactly. Boredom. Yep.
Exactly. Never
and,
be
and,
bored.
And next year's trip, when does that get announced?
It'll probably, if it happens, be announced in September.
All right.
Just a little chill off time, little downtime and see what's what. And yeah, plenty of time to hit the spring travel schedule.
And a newsletter so people who are interested could stay informed, right?
I have a very large newsletter. I'm in touch every month at least. And sometimes when I get new stuff in and very active and wonderful customers and yeah.
Lisa, enjoyed it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Gary. Good luck with your venture.
Thanks. All right. And thanks to everyone for listening.